Congratulations, you have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 579 of the Lambcast. I'm Rob of Movie Rob, and I'll be hosting this week's episode. This week, we bring you a very special episode as we take a look at the upcoming Oscars, which will be telecast in just under 2 weeks from now. 2020 was quite a unique year for all of us, no matter where you live on this planet. The COVID pandemic was able to bring together the entire world population as we all must work together in trying to find a way to stop this pandemic from taking an even higher toll than we've all had experienced over the year. The movie industry also took a hit this year due to the pandemic, and many of us haven't been able to see a film in the theater for quite some time. Personally, every day I keep breaking my own record of days away from the theater with no real end in sight since the theaters are still closed where I live. As of now, I'm at 14 months without being in the theater and counting. The last time I've been away so long from popcorn and a comfy theater seat was probably when I was just a toddler. The movie watching experience has relocated from the theater to home viewing for the most part, and the debate that raged a year and a half ago between Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg about streaming versus big screen has changed severely. Unfortunately, this has also affected the quality of the films released on VOD and in minimal theaters, which in turn has forced the Academy to alter their eligibility rules and given us a pretty unexciting year for films. In order to try and combat that, we at the Lamb decided to put together a crack team of recent Oscar winners in various categories to try and create a winning formula to breaking the lackluster feel for the films of the past year. Joining us today is, he's a regular host of the Lambcast and also runs Kirkham Movie A Day, Best Director winner Richard Kirkham will be joining us. Welcome to the panel, Richard.
Thank you, and I'd like to give my thank you speech now since Jay Clute accepted my award last year. But I don't want the show to go on too long.
We just always have to stretch. That's fine. A heavily lauded screenwriter who also hosts a pop art podcast along with his rantings and raving website, Best Original Screenplay winner, Howard Kastner. Welcome, Howard.
Well, hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. When not writing about superhero films on her blog, she travels the world as a professional belly dancer. Please welcome Best Production Designer winner, Jeanette Ward of The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl.
Thank you. It is an honor just to be nominated, but it's better to win.
That's right. After winning his Oscar for Best Cinematography, he stayed in his native Michigan and continues to churn out posts on sports, politics, and, of course, movies. Please welcome Cameron Kanacki.
Kanacki.
Sorry. Someone always messes up the names on the, you know, as they're written on the cards.
So. Yeah, it's all right. To quote Joe Pesci in his acceptance speech, it's my privilege. Thank you.
And finally, her win for Best Adapted Screenplay for adapting such a great classic novel led her back to the classroom in order to continue to meld young minds about the great classics of literature, whether they are in the library or on film. Here's Lisa Leahy of the Critical Critics.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me. And John Travolta has pronounced my last name as Leahy, so you can take that as you will.
Wait, well, what's the correct pronunciation?
For once, he was correct. My last name is Leahy. That's totally okay.
I once again apologize. Leahy.
I screw it up every other week, Rob. Don't worry about it.
That's totally fine. It's part of my character now.
And you now have an Oscar on your mantle, so that's good.
Hey, it works for me.
All right, well, the way that we're going to do this is we're going to alternate between discussing the eight nominated films and a number of categories. We'll hopefully get through the 10 categories that we'd like to. So we're going to start off by going with Best Original Screenplay. Okay, the nominees this year for Best Original Screenplay are Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago Seven. So, Howard, why don't you, if, why don't you tell us what you've seen of the movies, what your thoughts are, and what your prediction is.
Well, I have seen all but Promising Young Woman. The movie theaters are now opened in Chicago, so Friday and Saturday I saw Minari and Nomadland, so I'm getting caught up. And it looks like, from what I understand, the one that's supposed to win is the one I haven't seen, and that is Promising Young Woman. After that, my favorite, though, of the four I've seen is Minari. I think The Trial of Chicago 7 is very entertaining, but it's a rather routine trial movie. Judas and the Black Messiah is also very interesting, but I didn't find it quite that exciting for whatever reason. The Sound of Metal is a very well-meaning social problem film, but I think it survives best on the performances of its two leads. So I thought Minari was very interesting, very fresh, extremely moving.
Yeah, I actually just saw Minari for the first time today. And I liked it a lot. I didn't think it was amazing, but I thought it was very good, very well done.
I'm not sure I could also say it's amazing, so I know what you mean.
Right. I mean, we're going to probably say this a lot over the course of this show, that a lot of these movies are very good, but it's hard for me to actually agree that many of them are considered best film material when you look at the number of films, you know, over the last 94 years, you know, that have been nominated. Okay. Thank you, Howard. Richard, which of these have you seen?
I've seen The Trial of the Chicago 7 and, one of the other, Sound of Metal. And the others I have not seen yet, so I will reserve opinion on them. I've looked up all the odds on these things, and Trial of Chicago 7 seems to be the favorite at the moment. That's an Aaron Sorkin screenplay. I don't quite understand how it counts as being an original screenplay, since he used transcripts from the trial in writing some of this. That seems a little unfair. But I suspect that Promising Young Woman will probably be the winner. I think it's going to get awards in a couple of categories, but not the big one, and this will probably be one of the places that they can acknowledge it.
Just to answer that, the reason why it would be an original is he probably used much more than the original transcripts. And if you use three or more as your source material, it becomes original.
That's interesting to me. You would think it would be considered synthesis. Like, this is an English AP exam thing. You use all the various things to put together one idea, but they're still not yours. You need to give credit. Not suggesting that Sorkin didn't, but if he's taking from other sources, it's still not original.
Maybe it has to be, if it's something coming from a copyrighted source. Is a transcript considered a copyrighted source?
Probably not.
Well, it's best adaptation of a book or a play. It's not an adaptation of something that really happened. So
right, but I mean, movies have been nominated for adaptations of articles also. You know, mm-hmm. That's why I was thinking that it's something that's been published.
I think it's interesting because
Borat is considered an adaptation, even though, but only because it's based on characters. It's not based on an actual story or anything.
Well, this whole thing has been kind of a screwy look. It's always a question how the writers decide what counts. I remember two decades ago when Kenneth Branagh was nominated for best screenplay. It wasn't written, best adapted screenplay, when he used a word-for-word text version of Hamlet, and I'm going, wait, you know, exactly. How does that work? You know, so there's always some technical thing that gets them by, and I'm sure that there was something that fit here. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Well, frankly, there's a book out there that I was looking into today because I just saw The Trial of the Chicago 7 last night and started looking, you know, for source material kinds of things that I could figure out what's real and what's not. There's a book called Conspiracy in the Streets, The Extraordinary Trial of the Chicago 7. And it's identified as John Wiener is identified as the editor. There's an afterword from Tom Hayden. And on the cover of the book itself, there's one of those stars that says now a major motion picture.
Interesting.
So this, I don't know if it came directly from this or from the source material that's included in this. I haven't gotten my hands on it yet.
Wait, but are you talking, are you sure, when did this book come out? Because first of all, Tom Hayden has passed away. So, you know, he couldn't have written the foreword or the afterword right now. But in the 1980s, there was an HBO movie called Conspiracy, the Trial of the Chicago 8, which was a teleplay that actually had actors playing the characters. But you also got the, it was the last time that all of the eight members of the Chicago 8 or Chicago 7, however you want to look at it, because, you know, not only, it depends how you count. They actually are all there also meeting with their counterparts, you know, and giving them. So it's possible that that was the one that that was based on.
Well, so this was published 2006, 10 years before Hayden passed.
Right. Okay.
If you want another little strange story, when the Coen brothers did Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?, the Academy actually asked them, where do you want to be listed, an adaptation or original?
And what is the answer?
What?
They said, which one do we have a better chance at winning?
Well, that's generally what you go for. I think they, I don't know if they went for adaptation of the Odyssey or they, not.
It was adaptation. It was nominated for adapted screenplay.
Yeah, so that's the one they choose. I think they sort of laughed and said, okay, put us in adapted. Even though we never read the Odyssey, put us in adapted.
All right, Lisa, what do you think about this category?
So this is actually one of my better categories just because I've seen three of them. That being said, I saw two of them yesterday, so I really can't brag that much. I have seen Judas and the Black Messiah. I did see Promising Young Woman, and I did see The Trial of the Chicago 7. It's interesting that – because I don't look up the odds and things because all the odds are all different everywhere, and it makes my head hurt. So I tend to sort of just look around and kind of go with my gut on this. I would love for Promising Young Woman to win this simply because I think it's an incredible film. Completely caught me off guard. Like, I've been dying to see this film for a year, and for some reason I dragged my feet when it finally showed up VOD. Finally sat down and said, I'm watching it tonight, and I'm blown away by this. I'm a huge Carey Mulligan fan. We'll talk about her later. But it's interesting because the screenplay, I was reminded of other films. So I don't know how flashy original screenplay Oscar worthy this might be, but I almost have a sense of this being different enough. You know, I'm sorry, I don't remember who was saying it, but you know, all the depressing films this year, I feel like this one has enough levity in there and enough rah-rah in there that it does set it apart from some of these others that do really group well together. I mean, if you're doing a social justice unit in school, like, you've got quite a few of these films that you could just kind of say, hey, here's the next quarter for me.
Exactly.
So
it becomes more palatable.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, certain characters showing up in – or characters, excuse me, individuals showing up in more than one film, you know, I find that fascinating. So I almost think – it will split the votes in many ways. Mm. I think The Trial of the Chicago 7 is wonderful. I really enjoyed it. I do like Aaron Sorkin, and I was surprised it wasn't talkier.
Well, because he was limited by what's in the transcripts.
And there you go. And that's true. Good point.
And his characters were all in the one room. They couldn't walk around.
This is very, very true. I think Trial of the Chicago 7 is going to nab editing easily, in my opinion. But for screenplay, I, having not seen Minari, and that's what's kind of sticking in my craw, based on what I've heard and my partial information on this, I think it'll come down to Minari or Promising Young Woman. And then, being as that is, I think Promising Young Woman will edge it out just because of the fact that it does set itself apart, being a little bit more, yeah, God, it's weird to say seeing the movie, being a little brighter, question mark. I mean, because it's really not a lighthearted movie. But it definitely settles in for cynical, sarcastic individuals like myself.
It gives a satisfying end to everything.
Without going into things, I was blown away by where things went. I definitely was taken aback.
Okay. All right, Jeanette, what do you think?
I'm going to second a lot of this. I've seen two of these. I'll have, I think, probably the rest of them seen. This is one of those categories where I actually we've said this, but it's always a struggle for me to get through the nominated films. And I start out with the best intentions, and then I'll watch one or two of them and be like, these are so heavy and depressing and upset. And every year, and it's – I'd love to get to a point where quality filmmaking is not necessarily – it doesn't have to be as depressing as it has been in the past. And I know that's not always the case, but when
not
you're
everything
telling –
can be Black Panther.
When you're telling a compelling, I know that. When you're telling a compelling story, it doesn't have to be about struggle. And I think that it's easier to make that choice. So that's ongoing discussion with this writing. And I think this will come up a couple of times. But it's an interesting thing to point out where, yes, Judas and the Black Messiah was fascinating, but again, I think has been pointed out, it's the acting there is more compelling than the writing. And so to kind of keep in mind what category we're discussing when bringing these up, Sound of Metal was really fascinating. And I, again, saying you enjoyed it is a little bit weird, but it certainly was compelling. But again, the performances is really what draws you into that. So I think the writing, I think definitely here between Minari and Promising Young Woman, I think, according to what I've read on the interwebs, Promising Young Woman has the edge right now. I was a little surprised that Aaron Sorkin wasn't considered the default win. I think that reputation does matter when you carry that into some of these Academy votes, and I feel like Aaron Sorkin has the reputation behind where a lot of people will feel he's easy to vote for. So it will be very interesting to see where this goes. I think it's almost a toss up. So I'm intrigued and I'm looking forward to watching Minari and Promising Young Woman.
Okay. And Cameron, what do you think?
Well, I agree with all of the, this is probably the only category where I agree with the vast majority of the nominees. I'm of the opinion that four out of the five films nominated here were more than well deserving their nominations. I believe, however, that although I did like Trial of Seven, I was ultimately not the biggest fan of it. I think it's a good film, but ultimately Aaron Sorkin's direction gets in his own way, and it comes off as kind of a neoliberal film that waters down a lot of it. But in its place, I would have definitely nominated Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, which I believe is the best film of 2020. However, let's go to the nominees. The other films are all phenomenal and in my personal top 10 of the year. Promising Young Woman has a brilliant, darkly comedic screenplay. Minari is very real and honest and heartwarming. Judas and the Black Messiah tells an incredible story that needs to be told, and Sound of Metal is fascinating and is real. But ultimately, in terms of performances, Sound of Metal and Judas and the Black Messiah are more performance-driven than writing-driven. So for me, it goes to either Promising Young Woman and Minari, and I think out of the two better ones, Promising Young Woman is the better of the two, personally, in screenwriting. But in terms of Oscars, it's either, in my opinion, going to be Promising Young Woman or The Trial of Chicago 7. And considering Promising Young Woman has already won Best Original Screenplay at the Writers Guild of America Awards, I am leaning more towards Promising Young Woman.
Okay. Well, as for me, I pretty much agree with everyone, with what everyone said so far. I have seen all five of them. I'm a big Aaron Sorkin fan, as you know. I'm a big West Wing fan also. Mm-hmm. So you know, and I've always loved the way that he writes his characters and the dialogue and the way that everything moves along. for me, the trial is Chicago 7 up until a few weeks ago was my favorite film of 2020 because I just found it so compelling, the way that the story was told, even though I knew the story beforehand. So I just liked Sorkin's storytelling. Yes, I agree with Cameron that it gets a little liberal, heavy-handed, but you know, anyone who knows West Wing is knows that that's what Sorkin does. But Promising Young Woman, I think, does have has the edge here, because as Cameron mentioned, it did win the WGA, and I think they're trying to figure out a way this year to spread around the wealth a little bit, and try to give some newcomers some awards here. So I think this is going to be Promising Young Women. Okay, so we finished that category. Let's move on. As we mentioned, we're now going to talk about one of the nominees. So let's start with Mank, which has the most nominations of any film this year. It actually has 10, and it's a lot more than anyone else. The closest it comes is you have another 6 movies that each got 6 nominations. Which what's interesting is up until probably about 15 or 20 years ago, it was usually a given that whatever film had the most nominations had the best chance of winning when, winning Best Picture. That changed when Lord of the Rings in 2001, Fellowship of the Ring had the most nominations and, was beat out. So Mank is nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor for Gary Oldman, Best Directing for Fincher, Best Supporting Actress for Amanda Seyfried, Best Sound, Best Production Design, Best Original Score, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Costume Design, Best Cinematography. Those are its 10 nominations. The big question here is whether they're actually going to be able to win any of them. That is the question. Who on our panel has seen Mank and wants to discuss it?
Well, I've seen it, and discussing it is a little hard because I slept through half of it, and then I had to go back and watch the rest of it.
That might be all you need to say.
Yeah, this is a movie that I think gets nominated because of the subject matter and the Academy wanting to, you know, they love talking about movies and giving it attention. And I think Gary Oldman's great. But this should have been a heck of a lot more interesting, and it's right up my alley, and I had a very hard time getting through it. So I would be surprised that if it took any of the major awards, it may get some of the secondary awards. That's my opinion, for what it's worth.
Yes, I wondered about that because I didn't see it listed, you know, again, checking the interwebs to see what's predicted to win everything. Mank, with its 10 nominations, really doesn't seem to be picked as a favorite in anything.
No, I don't think it is.
Correct. No, in production design. Production design is the one where it seems to be leading, which I can sort of understand why they, you know, because it, of all these movies nominated, it's pretty much the only one that... That takes place actually Ma Rainey also takes place in the past, but I think it's because of the look, the way that they did it, because it's in black and white, and and the idea that it is based on Hollywood, you know, that I think that they're trying to throw it a bone with the production design.
I mean, I've seen about a third of it. I didn't finish it yet. And that's only because it was my third movie last night, and around 11:30, the teacher brain starts shutting down. I was paying attention to the score. I really love that Trent Reznor has made his name in doing these scores now, being a 90s kid myself. I'm not impressed by it. I'm like, okay, well, let's see about the other one he did, so, because I don't see this winning anything. I like the design of the film in that, you know, you've got the changing in scenery or changing in setting, and, you know, you've got the little screenplay typing. I think that's nice. I don't see Gary Oldman doing anything in this film that blows out of the water anything else he's done before. I don't know. Like, I do love Citizen Kane. I really enjoyed RKO 281 in the late 90s. Like, I like this idea of let's investigate what happened behind the scenes kind of thing. But so far in what I'm seeing, it's not something that people are going to be talking about for years to come. I don't see it. I think you're right. I think the idea that it's about Hollywood and it's nostalgic and it's stylized and it's black and white. I mean, so far, the only thing that has impressed me is the individual who plays Orson Welles and how well he sounds like him. I was kind of like, oh, I see you. I like that. That's great. Like, that's been the only thing that stood out for me so far watching this film.
Okay. And you know, he's not nominated for anything.
Nope. Tom Burke. Thank you for the name, because it was escaping me.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else have anything else to say about Mank?
Yeah. I slightly disagree with what people are saying. I actually...
That's allowed, Howard.
Yes. And it's not unusual for me. I actually really enjoyed the movie. I found it fascinating. I was highly entertained. I think it's technically brilliant. I think the acting is brilliant. I think the directing is great. But I also agreed with what so many other people were saying on Facebook. Why was this movie made? And I couldn't figure out why. Yeah. I found it entertaining, but I'm going, after it's over, I'm going, and, you know. Okay. So, you know, and you notice it's not nominated for screenplay. So somehow along the way, you were able to do something technically brilliant with this, except make it mean anything. And I think that's where it sort of falls down. It doesn't really mean anything. All it really does is say that Mankiewicz is responsible for Citizen Kane and not Orson Welles. And I'm going, okay.
Yeah, it's not up for editing either. Like, I looked after seeing the transitions and it was like, oh, never mind. It's not up for that one.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right. Does anyone else have anything to say more about Mank?
Yes, I would like to say some more stuff about Mank. Also, that is a sign that I really want someone to just create a whole big compilation of every time someone says Mank in the movie.
But now you have a project for yourself, Cameron.
There it is.
I feel like in a normal year that would have been a bit in the broadcast, but who knows if that'll make it this year.
True.
But yeah, I really enjoyed Mank. I think Gary Oldman gives one of his best performances, a lot better than the one he recently won for, but that's not my business. Amanda Seyfried's also great. Technically, on the technical side, it's brilliant. Everything is in tip-top shape: directing, cinematography, editing, production design, costume, sound design. And the one thing I thought that, you know, technically that hasn't got a lot of love is the visual effects. I mean, looking at like how they did it, you'd think, oh, it's just regular production design, but a lot of that is CGI, and on a budget of $25 million, it looks incredible. And you know, in the screenwriting side, I mean, yeah, it is a little dry, but I thought the script was filled with a lot of solid wit and snappy dialogue. I really enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. I'm not bored. I just, you know, it was late.
And, I mean, a point to make that it did win the BAFTA for Best Production Design. That's the only one it won.
Okay.
But at the BAFTAs, it was only nominated for six categories. Now, I'm not sure if all those categories were dealt with yesterday or not. You know, some of them might be coming up today. It won production design, and it's also nominated for best score, screenplay, costume design, cinematography, and makeup and hair. So I guess we'll have to see if any of those other awards are still yet to come.
It was it also received production design from the Critics' Choice Awards and from the Los Angeles Film Critics Association.
Right. All right, so let's move along to the next category that we will talk about, the animated film, best animated film, animated feature, excuse me. And the nominees this year are Onward, Over the Moon, Shaun the Sheep Movie, Farmageddon, Soul, and Wolfwalkers. Now, does anyone out there think that anything but Soul has a chance right now?
I've heard some rumblings about Wolfwalkers, but I lean more towards Soul.
That's my understanding. It's going to be.
Yeah, I've heard very good things about Wolfwalkers. We on our show earlier this year, we had two or three people who raved about it, but they're not voting members of the Academy, and Soul, of course, is probably the most successful of all those things, although it's hard to measure success because we don't get all the streaming numbers and revenue issues, but I'm sure that more people have seen Soul, and it was widely praised.
And it's Pixar. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Even though this is one of the first times that Pixar has to go against themselves, you know, because you have both Onward and Soul that are nominated. They somehow made it so that they have two films that came out in the same year that are running against one another. Personally, I enjoyed Onward more, but I can understand why Soul is pretty much a lock. This is, I would say this is one of the few categories that you can say is a complete lock. Mm-hmm. It would be very shocking. It would be a major, major shocker if something else wins besides Soul.
Go Shaun the Sheep movie.
has anyone here seen it? I actually, Jay convinced me to watch it, and I saw both Shaun the Sheep movies, and even though, you know, we're all part of the Lamb, I hated them both. I was not a fan.
I started watching Shaun the Sheep movie Farmageddon, and it didn't keep my interest. It's on Netflix, so
you can see it.
Which probably accounts for its nomination.
I'm a Wallace and Gromit fan. I am, but this movie just really boring. Didn't really do anything for me.
Soul.
Okay, does anyone else have anything?
The animated category is always the pick the Pixar movie. It that's not always the case, but it usually feels like a safe choice.
Pixar
it was interesting.
Or Disney.
Yeah, it was interesting this year in that they had both Onward and Soul, but like you said, I think Soul has the traction. So this one feels like not a lot of guesswork.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing. So, I enjoyed the movie. I did fall asleep in some of it, but you know.
All right. So let's move along to the next nominated film. We're going to discuss Nomadland, which is nominated. It's got the second most nominations, along with five other movies. It has six nominations for Best Picture, Best Actress for Frances McDormand, Best Directing for Chloe Zhao, I guess how you pronounce it, Adapted Screenplay also for Chloe Zhao, Film Editing also for Chloe Zhao, and Cinematography also, no, actually, for someone else. Almost got you there. So who has seen Nomadland and wants to discuss it?
I've seen it. I enjoyed it. I don't know about McDormand on this one, but I did like the film very much. I did like the individuals who appear in the film, but my running, you know, what sticks in my craw about this film is that I think it would have been better as a documentary than as call it a motion picture film, that's the same thing. You know what I mean? I don't know. Do you call it fictionalized? Whatever this is, I think it would have been better as a straight documentary about the individuals. And I would not at all be surprised if one came out within the next year or two. I mean, really.
But then it would be an adapted documentary, wouldn't it?
it could very well be.
Yeah. But, I saw
it yesterday. I think it's an absolutely beautiful and very moving film that works very well. It's sort of an example of the new neorealism that a lot of filmmakers have, sometimes because, well, it's cheaper. But what I thought was most amazing about it, in a way, I'm over-exaggerating when I say most amazing, is that usually in neorealism films like this, I'm put off because I can go, oh, that's not an actor, but they are. And the actors are more interesting than the non-actors. But somehow the director and the actors here have either found the exact right people or they've somehow got Frances McDormand and David Strathairn to so lower their acting that they're almost the same as the non-actors. And I thought that was quite incredible. There are things that I have problems with. It sometimes they don't play fair. When Frances McDormand says, well, I can't live on Social Security benefits, I'm going, well, no, you work and you get Social Security benefits. That it's been a long time since you couldn't work and get Social Security benefits if you were below 65. So that made absolutely no sense to me. I worked and got Social Security benefits at the same time. So that was idiotic. And another time when she's going after the people for, you're selling these houses no one can afford, and I'm going, but you live in a house or a home that you can't afford because you just borrowed $2,300 to fix it. But I think my biggest issue, as much as I love it, I love this film, it's one of my favorites of the years, is that it has all these people that say, this is how life should be. And I'm going, but you seem remarkably unhappy.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
It's the myth of Thoreau. You know, instead of pointing out that Thoreau was actually a big hypocrite, they make this movie about how Thoreau was right, and I'm going, but God, you're also unhappy. You haven't convinced me that this is a great life to live at all. You know.
I think that's almost a reason why this may have been more fascinating as a documentary. I also watched it yesterday, and it was interesting. And I think, yes, the performances were between the two actors in it were really keyed to match everyone else. And I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, I think a documentary would – it feels like a documentary, which is – maybe the success of it, I think, yes, using the word neorealism, which I'm going to now store and use as a reference later, I think that's fascinating too. I was intrigued by the movie. Yes, they all talk about like, yeah, we're totally free, but they all seem really bummed all the time. But, you know, that's, I think, maybe a artistic choice. It makes it, it was a beautiful movie. There was a lot of like, oh, we're here, we're connecting with the land. And I'm like, but are you, because you're traveling around? And I mean, that's another, the environmental safety of this. That's another.
They're loving the land in different states.
Yeah, that would have been something that, again, would have been a interesting chapter of a documentary. So it was fascinating. I appreciated it. I thought it was really well crafted and well done, and certainly worthy of nomination. But it raises some question marks, which maybe is part of its draw.
Yeah, I think part of the draw of this film is that it resonates because of COVID.
Yes.
You know, people are looking at it that, okay, here we're all stuck in our homes, and these people, if they're stuck in their homes, they're still able to travel. You know. The problem
even though
is
that place in 2012.
Right. Okay. I realize that. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm just, you know.
I wasn't saying it's taking place during COVID, but it's. Yes, you're correct, Howard. I mean, it's as you guys said, it is beautifully shot. It won the BAFTA for best cinematography. It's right now, from what I've read, the front runner for cinematography. It's the front runner for adapted screenplay. It's the front runner for directing, which you know, we'll get to at some point later today. And it's also the front runner for best picture, according to a lot of different sources. I'm not sold on that. But, you know, as Richard mentioned earlier, we're not voting members, so it's a little bit more, you know, we can have our opinions, but our opinions don't really count because we can't express them via the Oscar ballot.
It's so interesting because it paints a picture of this life of freedom, and at no, it has this.
Free.
if it had ended with a, oh, I would love to try this lifestyle, but it doesn't really leave you with that. It leaves you with like, oh, well, that's a choice they're making. But it also doesn't leave you with the, because it could have taken the path of, these people are addicted to this and they are unable to put down roots and they can't live a regular life. Like, it could have gone that way too. It doesn't really evoke a strong response either way. But again, maybe that's part of its gift. It's not
Top Gun or Backdraft where they're going to get people to join the you know, the Navy. Or the
it's not a marketing tool.
This is true.
It's not a recruiting tool.
The big nomad culture.
Exactly.
I think it's interesting what Jeanette is saying, this idea that it definitely doesn't inspire any kind of wanderlust. In fact, some of the cinematography is so brilliant, it actually made me feel a little agoraphobic. Like, I have no interest in being out there in the middle of everything being so open like that. I'd love the idea. I've never been able to do, not yet anyway, like a cross-country road trip, and it's definitely something on my bucket list. But this film doesn't make me think, oh, I'd love to just sort of put things down and go out and do this for a while. And, you know, it doesn't have that sort of glamorizing feel to it. In fact, you know, Jeanette, you're saying that they don't have the ability to sort of put down roots. I think that Frances McDormand's character does feel that way. Like, you do have those beautiful shots at the end when she's in that house that she had with her husband. And,
yeah.
You know, we are inside, but she goes outside because she can't be in there.
Yes. You've seen with her sister where I cannot stay here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found that really interesting as far as the character development goes. But I think you're right. Like, a film like this, perhaps you done in different hands, would have had more of a wanderlust feel to it and an appeal that this really just doesn't. It's got a certain melancholy to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Richard or Cameron, do either of you have anything to say about this? Have either of you seen
it? I have not seen it. But I do think it is my favorite poster of the year. So I'll give it an award for that.
that's not one of the categories we're discussing.
Damn it,
today, Richard.
Oh.
Cameron, what did you say?
Oh, I loved it. It's top five of the year for me. It's incredibly well made, well written, well acted. And also, I have a bit of a personal connection to it because of the film being about loss. Between my first viewing and my second viewing of it, one of my good friends, who was a year younger than me, suddenly passed away. Mm. And seeing it the second time gave me a little bit of closure, I guess.
Mm. Interesting.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything else to say about Nomadland? Okay.
I kind of want to know. Sorry, on. Can yeah. I real quick?
Go ahead.
Richard,
go ahead.
Which poster do you mean?
The license plates.
The one with all of them. I've just found that one, and I'm like looking at it myself, thinking, "Ooh, that's a good one." Okay, sorry, I just had to know that random.
That's
little
okay.
Fact.
That's okay. Not a problem. All right, moving along, we'll go to Best Supporting Actress. So the nominees are Maria Bakalova for Borat subsequent movie film, Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy, Olivia Colman for The Father, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Yoo Young-jung for Minari. Richard, what have you seen of these, and what is your opinion?
Well, let me see.
I have seen
Amanda Seyfried, and that's all I've seen.
Okay, so she gets your vote.
Well, no, I wouldn't. That would not be my prediction. Like I said, I haven't seen any of the other films, so I have no opinion on this. I'm gonna, when we make our discussion about what we think's going to win, I'll have an opinion. But
No problem.
I think I'm clueless.
Okay, Jeanette, what about you?
I'm going with Ya Jung-yoon from Minari, and I don't have anything to back that up aside from that's just what I'm thinking is going to happen.
Okay, that's fair. Howard?
I've seen all but Olivia Colman and The Father, which is actually one hint that the BAFTAs really did things differently this year because Olivia Colman, one of the favorites of – England did not get a BAFTA nomination. I think all the performances that I saw were really good. Glenn Close, I thought, gave her most interesting and best performance in years. I was really astonished at how
she really transforms herself there. Also, there's no question about that.
Usually, either in the supporting act or the supporting actress, one of them, sometimes in the screenplay, the Academy usually wants to give it to a film that's not going to win in anything else. And they want to give it something. So sometimes they give it a supporting actor, supporting actress. So right now the leads are Yoo Jung-yoon for Minari, who was, gave a very beautiful, wonderful performance. And Maria Bakalova, or I didn't finish watching the movie, but we can discuss that later, for Borat. So right now I think the lead is for Yoo Jung-yoon. For Minari, who is one of the biggest stars, I understand, in Korea.
And has just won the BAFTA as of just a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, oh, wow. That's okay. going to help. But Maria Bakalova was very good. I just couldn't finish watching the movie, but that's something else.
Okay. Cameron?
Yeah, it's going to be Yoo Jung-yoon for Minari, and that is incredibly well-deserved. She is my favorite performance out of all the nominees. As for the other nominees, Olivia Colman in The Father is phenomenal. Amanda Seyfried in Mank, great. Maria Bakalova is fascinating in Borat's subsequent movie film, although I do think that she was more of a lead instead of supporting personally. But as for Glenn Close and Hillbilly Elegy, that performance was not good. I mean, I hate that movie. It just, the performance is just, considering this, her performance was not only nominated for an Oscar, it was also nominated for a Razzie.
Oh.
This is the first double nomination for Oscar and Razzie, if I'm correct, since Amy Irving for Yentl.
Okay, that could be.
Yeah.
I know it's been a while, so that is possible.
Yeah. Personally, I would have moved Bakalova in the lead, and my other nominees would have been Dominique Fishback for Judas and the Black Messiah, who is the heart and soul of that film, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. She did a lot of the heavy lifting.
So good.
Talia Ryder in Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, whose performance is a bit more understated and a little bit even more understated and subdued than her counterpart, Sydney Flanagan. And this is a very, very off-kilter nomination for me. It was a very small film. Gail Rankin for The Climb, which came out this year. She's hilarious in that. In my opinion, Yoo Jung-yoon is going to win.
Okay. And Lisa?
So I'm very behind on this one. Like I said, I've only seen a third of Mank. I have seen none of the others. And I try not to be a movie snob, but I don't want to watch Borat. I haven't seen the other one. I don't want to see this one. It's just not my style. Sacha Baron Cohen is very good at what he does, but he does not do things I like. That being said, I loved him in The Trial of the Chicago 7, so whatever. personally, I love Olivia Colman, and I don't care what she does. I will watch her read the phone book. I thought she was lovely when she's won other awards. I just think she's a doll. So I would just be personally thrilled for her to win, even though I haven't seen The Father yet. But I feel like it's going to go to Yoon Jung-un as well for Minari. I can't really say why. Just, I don't know, call it women's intuition. I feel like this is probably going to go to her sight unseen. But in other related news, Howard, were you the person who just moments ago said you really loved Glenn Close's performance? Because I would like to see Howard and Cameron go at it now.
Yeah, I think it's the most interesting and best performance she's given in years.
Can we have an episode about this, Richard?
You know, we need debate episodes on some of these things, of course, where we're just going to match these kinds of opinions against one another. I'm not trying to rush. Well, no, I'm lying. I am trying to rush people. We have been going for quite a while on a couple of categories, and if we're okay with a 4-hour show, no problem. Let's keep going.
No.
Right. Okay, the only thing I wanted to add about this category is that I found it interesting that Jodie Foster wasn't nominated for the Mauritanian, where she won the Golden Globe for her performance. Yeah, that is interesting. It was an interesting performance. The movie itself is okay. You know, it starts off really well, and it loses a lot of its energy as the movie moves along, in my opinion.
There's no Oscar campaign for it, so.
Okay.
Could be. I saw nothing. I saw absolutely.
Okay. So I think that I'm also on board with Yoo Jung-yong to win for this one. All right, so let's move along. Promising Young Woman, which we've discussed a little bit before about this. Does anyone have anything else to say besides what we discussed earlier when we were talking about during the screenplay?
I haven't seen it, so.
I think you should see it, definitely.
No, I will see it.
But. So many interesting things about it. I think the ensemble cast is very interesting, especially if you've got a number of, I don't want to say small, but smaller character actors, like a lot of people that you go, oh, yeah, I know you from that show, or I know you from this film. And I found that very interesting. I think Carey Mulligan is astonishingly good in pretty much anything. And I think she's very interesting and ironically subdued here, but in a very good way. So I am definitely pulling for this one as a possibility, even though I think that if it's going to win original screenplay, I don't think it's going to win here.
Right. Okay. I would agree with that. Anyone else have anything to say before we move along to the next category? Mm-mm. Okay, all right, let's go with Best Foreign Language Film, International Feature Film. And the nominees are Another Round, Better Days, Collective, The Man Who Sold His Skin, and Quo Vadis Ada. Has anyone seen any of these films? Besides, most of you probably have seen or heard of Another Round.
I haven't seen anything. I'll see Another Round this week.
I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah, Collective has gone by on Hulu, and so I almost clicked on it the other day and have not seen it, but I haven't gotten to any of them yet either.
Okay. Richard, I'm assuming that you have the same opinion.
I am 0 for 5 in this category. And
well, that's a way to save time.
There you go.
Me too.
However, the director of Another Round is nominated for Best Director, so that seems like it would make it a favorite.
That's saying something.
Yep. Right. And I've heard, I've had Quo Vadis Ada recommended to me by 6 people who've seen it. And when I watched the trailer on it, I thought, why am I not watching this? And the only reason I haven't is that it's kind of a boutique sort of video on demand, and I was a little uncertain about downloading the app, so I just thought I'll wait until it's more widely available. But it looks to me like a very interesting film and probably pretty important, although it'll be another one that's damn depressing.
Right. Okay, now I've seen 4 out of 5. I just realized right now that I missed one of them. I actually thought I had watched all of them, so I have 2 weeks to find a copy of The Man Who Sold the Skin, because I have no idea what that's about. I thought Another Round was good, but again, the story is far too depressing. I was looking for some upbeat aspect of it, and it just never came around. No pun intended.
I think it's interesting that Collective comes up in documentary feature too.
Because it's a documentary.
No, I know that, but what I'm saying is, like, I don't think it's going to win in either category.
Correct.
Which is kind of too bad, because you hope that if you're going to land in more than one place that you'd at least get a chance at one, and I think it's going to come up over two here.
Right. Okay. I actually enjoyed Better Days. I think that was probably the best of the four, in my opinion. I'm not the biggest fan of foreign films anyway. So I watched them just because they were nominated.
Out of a sense of obligation rather than desire.
Of course, of course, of course. And again, now I have another obligation that I I need to watch a Tunisian film. Okay. All right, moving along to Judas and the Black Messiah. Another film that has the second most nominations this year, with mm-hmm. six nominations. And its nominations are for Best Picture. And it has two nominations for Best Actor for both
Best Supporting Actor.
I'm sorry. Best Supporting Actor. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Happens. Sorry. I didn't mean to be snarky.
That's my job. I'm supposed to be snarky.
Right. So Best Supporting Actor for Daniel Kaluuya. Best Original Song for the song Fight For You. Best Original Screenplay, Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role, Lakeith Stanfield, and Best Achievement in Cinematography, Sean Bobbitt. Jeanette, I'm sure you have something to say about this.
Yeah, I watched this one. It's certainly well-crafted, well-put-together. Yes, it's a fascinating story because a lot of people... Digging into the history of the Black Panther Party is always interesting because so many people have preconceived notions about it, and getting into the foundation of why it was created and what it did, and the fact that it really was a community outreach program and therefore education and healthcare and the well-being of the citizens involved, I think is super fascinating. And this particular story, and you can read about Fred Hampton's life and legacy on Wikipedia first and then get into this story. I think that... doing a little additional research prior to watching the movie was helpful because then I knew what the ending was going to be, what to expect, and according to what I saw, they did it exactly as it happened. It's upsetting, and what I find interesting about this movie in particular, Kaluuya's performance is amazing. Lakeith Stanfield's performance is amazing, and as was just mentioned, I just forgot her name, who should have been nominated for Best Supporting
Actress. Dominique Fishback.
Absolutely should not only be nominated but probably should win for supporting mm-hmm. actress. The choice they made to push both leads for supporting actor I find kind of fascinating because I think I would have put Lakeith Stanfield in as the lead and Kaluuya as supporting, but
that's what they were planning on doing if I recall correctly, but I don't know what exactly happened what led them to both get nominated and supporting.
I can
usually they
I can
Usually
give
they cancel themselves out when they do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I can give an explanation as for why they both were nominated in Best Supporting.
Because they knew they weren't going to be able to win lead.
Well, is this the game that they play when, like, you've got a number of, like, the Usual Suspects syndrome? Like, you've got all these people sort of as an ensemble where that nobody ends up being lead? Is it that kind of game?
No. Well, the theory is, because Lakeith Stanfield should have been, if he was going to be considered, he is the lead.
I mean, yes.
Yes. What people are theorizing is that you can nominate the same actor for the same film in both lead and supporting. You can't nominate an actor for more than one film in lead or supporting, but you can nominate him for the same film in lead and supporting. So if you want to try and make sure that your favorite has the best chance of getting a nomination, you vote for him in both lead and supporting. And then what happens is whichever category, if he doesn't make one of the categories, for example, he's not the top five one of the categories, then he's out of that category. But if he gets enough votes in both lead and supporting to be nominated in both, they go with the category where he got the most votes. So either he didn't get enough votes to make the lead, or he did get enough votes to make the lead, but he got more votes in the supporting category.
Mm.
If that makes any sense.
Numbers game.
But that's
absolutely.
That is interesting. Exactly. But okay. I do
We're seeing
worry
the sausage
that
being
I,
made.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's a shame because I think that Kaluuya will win, but it kind of overshadows the work that Lakeith Stanfield did in what might be a more difficult role to humanize that character. Kaluuya can watch the speeches that Fred Hampton gave and do his best impersonation or interpretation of that, which he said was approved by both the wife and the son, but it does kind of, unfortunately, it shortchanges Stanfield's performance, which was a little more nuanced and harder. So I don't know.
Right. I think Kaluuya's role is a flashier role, which fits into the best supporting actor category. Exactly. And Stanfield gives a more powerful dramatic role, which therefore should have been nominated for best actor. Uh-huh. But again, we don't get to vote, so not exactly. Much else we can do about that. Does anyone else have anything to say about this film? Cameron?
No, I echo all the previous statements.
Okay. Richard?
I have no opinion, having not seen it.
Okay. And Lisa?
I agree with what's been said already. Kaluuya is the one who's winning, though, currently for this one. So I think it'll probably go to him, but I did like Cohen in Chicago 7. So I don't know. As much as I do like Stanfield, I don't think he's going to get this one. I was just afraid initially when they were nominated that they would cancel each other out and neither one of them would get it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'm thinking it's going to be Kaluuya on this one, which frankly, I'm not sad about. I really liked him in this. I like him in general.
Right. Okay.
To cancel someone out, you usually need a third one that's going to do it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, since we're already discussing it, why don't we just move into the actor and supporting role category. The nominees this year are Sacha Baron Cohen for The Trial of the Chicago 7, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, Paul Racy for Son of Metal, and Lakeith Stanfield for Judas and the Black Messiah.
I forgot what category we were on. Sorry.
Supporting actor.
Paul Racy was really impressive in Sound of Metal, I thought. And Leslie Odom Jr. was great, but I don't think anyone can beat Kaluuya at this point.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think Paul Racy was the surprise nominee here, and he does a great job, showing how, you know, someone who actually lives in that world, you know, can give such a powerful performance. And I mean, I agree with Lisa that Sacha Baron Cohen is great in The Trial of Chicago 7. I know that months ago there was talk that there were numerous actors from that movie that were in the running for that in this category. And I'm actually glad that only one got in, because as we discussed with Judas, that if you have more than one, you know, it somehow lessens the chances of someone, being able to really grab the nomination. Because also Sacha Baron Cohen shows that as crazy he can be as Borat, he can also, he can also play A.B. Hoffman really well, who's, you know, his performance is very dramatic with a lot of humor peppered in, which is perfect for him. Okay. Anyone else have anything else to say about this category, actor in a supporting role, Lisa?
No, I need to see One Night in Miami and Sound of Metal, and Sound of Metal I feel like might skew my opinions a bit, so haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, Richard, anything?
The only one that I've seen in this is Paul Racy from Sound of Metal. I thought he was excellent, but I don't think he has a chance of winning. So it sounds to me like Daniel Kaluuya is the likely winner.
Okay. Cameron?
Oh, Kaluuya's going to win this by far, and he definitely deserves it. I've seen all the nominees. The only two I would keep are Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah and Paul Racy for Sound of Metal, because I'd move Stanfield into lead, personally. And then to replace the others, I'd put Alan Kim for Minari.
The kid, right?
Yeah, I know this is going to be an odd one, but Robert Pattinson for Tenet.
Interesting.
And from a movie I mentioned before, The Climb, supporting actor for Kyle Marvin, who's also really good in that film.
Mm-hmm. What about Jared Leto for The Little Things?
No. I don't think he belongs there at all.
Don't mention it. How the Trump spares.
Well, when we did the show a few months ago about The Little Things, we were all impressed about his performance there.
God, that performance was bad.
I agree. I wasn't a fan either.
Well, you guys weren't on the show, so your opinion doesn't matter.
Hang it off.
Lisa was. I remember that, and I remember that Lisa actually enjoyed his role then at the time. But I guess time has changed things, or maybe it's just my memory.
All right, everybody, go back and listen to that show again, and we'll do a comparison.
I mean, I remember saying that very much like the movie Insomnia, you could put three different people in there and the movie would be the same. I didn't like it that much.
Okay.
But anyway.
Fair enough. All right. Moving along, let's go to Minari, which, again, another film that has the second most nominations with 6 nominations this year. Has a nomination for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for... Steven Yeun, Best Supporting Actress for Yoo Jung-young, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Original Score. Okay, who has anything different to say about about this movie that we haven't already discussed? Anyone have anything new?
Don't all shout
out at once.
No, I just think it's a beautiful film. I was very... in many ways impressed by it. I liked the way they handled religion in it as well. I thought that was also quite interesting.
I like the way that they handled religion, but I think they could have gone a little deeper into it by the way that they, I think it was too superficial the way they did it. They could have gone a little bit deeper to make it more, to resonate more. But I like the fact that they touched upon it. Okay, so I guess we're going to move to the next category. Let's go to Best Actress. So the Best Actress in a Leading Role, we have the nominees are Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, Frances McDormand for Nomadland, and Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. Richard.
I've only seen Viola Davis, and I just saw it last night. I thought she was great. I appreciated the almost transformation of her as a person into this larger-than-life character that lived 100 years ago and was, you know, influential in the blues world. I assume that the singing was largely done on her own. I don't know that there was a voiceover singer in this particular case, so it was an impressive performance for me. I have not seen any of the other performances, so I will refrain after that.
Okay, Cameron?
I have only one thing to say about this category, and I will only say this. Sydney Flanagan was robbed. She gave...
Do you want to tell us who Sydney Flanagan is?
All right.
From Never Rarely.
She gave an incredible performance. Just, it's incredibly subdued, but so heartfelt. And the Academy just did not nominate it. She was robbed. I will riot against the Academy. Where is her Oscar?
Passion. There you go.
Okay. Lots of passion there.
Mulligan's winning it.
That's what it looks like.
Mulligan does seem to be the lead. I will say that Viola Davis is, I did see The United States versus Billie Holiday, and Andra Day is incredible. But, you know, Frances McDormand, I don't think was doing anything we haven't seen Frances McDormand do before. So while she was excellent, I think it was well within her wheelhouse. Maybe that doesn't make any sense, but I don't know. I'm intrigued. I think Viola Davis went further than we've seen her go before. So, yeah.
Okay. Howard?
I've seen three. I've not seen The United States versus Billie Holiday or Promising Young Woman. I think Frances McDormand was brilliant, but it would be her third lead Oscar, and that's hard to pull off, especially since her three
Oscars. Name is not Meryl Streep.
Yeah, but that's over a course of 30 years, you know, and
Meryl Streep only won two leads. Also, right. Frances McDormand, none of hers have been what I call a gimmick roles, like Lincoln and My Left Foot getting Daniel Day-Lewis two Oscars. I liked Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I just have a problem with the screenplay and the movie that turns me off a little bit. Viola Davis is great. Vanessa Kirby was really good, and I thought a very fascinating movie in many ways. I just found it quite interesting. So, but yeah, Carey Mulligan.
Okay, Lisa.
So I haven't seen enough. You know, I would love to pull for my native Rhode Islander, Viola Davis. But I do love Carey Mulligan a lot. Like I love my Olivia Colman. I love my Carey Mulligan. I don't think Frances McDormand does anything new here that would set her apart. I do think she definitely deserved it for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And I don't think that Nomadland is a better film than that one was, at least for me. You know, Andra Day won the Golden Globe. So now, you know, she's somewhere in contention. So I don't know. I think Mulligan's going to pull this one out because the entire film does hinge on her. And I don't think any other actress could step into that role and do it the way she did. I think she's just fantastic. So I'd be very happy to see her pull this one off.
Okay. Personally, I really enjoyed Vanessa Kirby's performance in Pieces of a Woman. I didn't know what to expect going into this movie. And I was transfixed the entire time because it felt so real, everything that was going on there. And to learn afterwards that the story is somewhat based on what really happened to the, you know, the director and writer made it even more powerful when I was thinking about that. Now, the one person I felt was snubbed in this was Rosamund Pike for I Care a Lot. Who she won the Golden Globe for this mm-hmm. for Best mm-hmm. Actress in a Musical or Comedy. I didn't think much of it when I read the premise, but when I saw the movie, it completely blew me away. And I thought that was a great performance. It's not as good as what she did in Gone Girl, because even though they're completely different types of roles, but you know, she was able to keep me transfixed with the her performance. And it's quite interesting because in most years the winners of the Golden Globes at least get nominated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's rare that you have so many that were skipped over this year. But then again, as we keep mentioning the whole time, this is a very odd
strange year.
Even though it's mm-hmm. an even year, it's an odd year.
Well, Taron Egerton got snubbed for the Oscars, so I'm still not over that one.
Well, I can give a theory as to why neither Rosamund Pike nor the person from the other movie didn't get nominated. I suspect that the vast majority of voters, whenever it came up, kept thinking these were made for TV movies.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
It's awfully hard to distinguish when you can't see them in a theater.
Mm-hmm. You have to have a real big campaign to distinguish it.
Right. Okay. Cameron, what were you going to say?
Howard, you said for Rosamund Pike, and then who else was it that you said that they thought they were made?
The one you mentioned.
Oh, Never Really, Sometimes Always?
Yeah.
Well, that did a theatrical release, but for only 3 days.
Right.
Because so I think COVID most, shut it down.
Because I keep forgetting that there were movies, especially the Rosamund Pike one. I kept thinking, wasn't that just made for Netflix? Mm. And so I think the voters just got that mixed up.
Never Or Sometimes Always was a Focus release. Then it got put on VOD because of the pandemic. And I think the reason that that film didn't get nominated, and we've seen a couple instances of it where we've had Academy voters come out and say that they would refuse to watch the film because of its subject matter.
Yeah, that could be true.
Yeah. Okay, so moving along, we still have three more Best Picture nominees that we haven't discussed. We have Sound of Metal, which was also nominated for 6 Oscars, just like almost all
like everything else.
everything but Mank. Actually, Promising Young Woman only had 5. Of the Best Picture nominees. So Sound of Metal was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor for Riz Ahmed, Best Supporting Actor for Paul Raci, Best Sound, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Film Editing. I personally think that the only one that has a chance of winning is Best Sound.
Ironically.
Which, this year, you know, combines... Exactly. Which this year combines the two categories that it used to be. It used to have sound editing and sound mixing. Exactly.
Yeah, the two categories that you knew what the difference was between them.
Well, I'm kind of
glad they just get combined. Yeah, I think
because it's going to make the show 5 minutes shorter.
Yes.
Are there any others they could combine? I think it should win that one. It did a good job of finding a way to get you involved with his transition through his hearing loss and again closing on the complete silence, I think was powerful as well. So I the movie was really well done, very interesting, and it's a shame that it's I think I read an article somewhere that said in any other year he would probably be a lock for Best Actor.
I think he's so good. I haven't seen this one yet, but I do think he's very under lauded. I think he's very good in stuff that he performs in.
Yeah, he was great in Rogue One.
No, have you seen the Night Of on HBO? He was excellent in that.
No, I'm going to second. He was excellent in Rogue One.
I'm good with that too.
Oh, well,
thank you, Jeanette. I don't remember him in that, frankly. You have to go back and rewatch it. Lisa,
Do I have to?
That's your homework assignment for tomorrow.
It's the end of the third quarter. Actually, it's probably better than the grading I would have to do.
Definitely better than the grading you'd have to do. okay, anyone have any other thoughts about Sound of Metal?
Hey, this is one of the ones that I've actually seen.
Okay.
And
do you have anything?
I thought it was interesting. I would have a hard time imagining it winning. It's just not... It's interesting in a very narrow framework, but as a story, I think it's a little tough for people to say, oh yeah, I remember all the things that happened in that. I remember feeling compelled the whole time. It's more of a character study, mm-hmm. and he was excellent. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think the sound editing or the sound category is probably a lock on this one.
Yeah. Okay, so moving along, our next category is Best Adapted Screenplay. So the 5 nominees are Borat, Subsequent Movie Film, The Father, Nomadland, One Night in Miami, and The White Tiger. Who wants to start off with this one? Any volunteers this time?
All right,
go ahead, Cameron.
Go ahead. I mean, I agree with 3 of the nominees here, those being Borat, 2... The Father, Nomadland. Personally, I think Nomadland's going to win. I really liked One Night in Miami, but I personally wouldn't place it as a nominee for Best Adapted Screenplay. And The White Tiger was okay. In their place, I would nominate First Cow, which I thought was wonderful. And I've mentioned it before, and I'll mention it again. The Climb.
Never. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Howard?
I've seen all but The Father. I think No Man's Land is going to win. I did not finish One Night in Miami because I kept saying, when is something going to happen? I mean, there's no conflict. There's no plot. There's nothing at stake in this movie. I just got bored and said, there's nothing happening. I didn't like Borat. I couldn't get through it either. The reason is the first one I thought was brilliant. I thought it was incredible satire. This time around, I find the character just annoying. I don't find him insightful or anything like that. I just find him incredibly annoying. I find all the characters annoying. And the satire of Eastern Europe this time seemed awfully mean-spirited.
It was mean-spirited in the first one, too.
Yes, but this was much more mean-spirited, much, much more. And it's almost as if, you know, the original country got so upset at it that, you know, he said, well, I'm just going to double down. And I just found it way more mean-spirited than the first one. The White Tiger has a problematic first half. The first half is the central character is so unlikable and so unsympathetic. And then halfway through, something happens. And when that thing happens, it's riveting. So, but I think No Man's Land, which I find a very beautiful picture, is probably going to win.
Okay, Lisa?
I haven't seen enough to really say much about it. Like I said, the only one I've seen is Nomadland, so I don't really have much of an opinion here.
Okay. Jeanette?
Yeah, I'll second that. I feel like Nomadland is the front runner.
Okay. Personally, I know that Nomadland is the front runner. I personally like The Father more, but we'll discuss that when we get to discussing that movie and
One Night in Miami. I think is a good set. Like, not every play needs to be a movie. I think a interesting character study can work on stage in a theater, but might not always work as a movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not even sure I would like it on stage, but yeah, I think that's basically, yeah, it could work on stage.
Right.
And it's okay. Picture a director, so.
Right. Which there was a lot of
talk about, they were
trying to get it.
Right.
This is adapted screenplay,
okay,
right?
So
we're finishing on here. Yeah. BAFTA's The Father was the winner, so I don't know.
Oh, I'm actually very happy about that. That's very nice to hear. Okay, so moving on to the next nominated film, The Trial of the Chicago 7. Who wants to guess how many nominations it has?
Six. Hooray!
Wait, which one? The Father?
Yeah. The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Trial of the Chicago 7.
So, it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor in Supporting Role for Sacha Baron Cohen, Best Original Screenplay, Best Film Editing, Best Cinematography, and Best Original Song for the song Hear My Voice. Mm. Okay, does anyone have something new to say about this that we didn't discuss when we've discussed the previous categories that it's been in?
I didn't care much for the song.
I don't think it'll win anything.
Nothing at all?
No, nothing. I think
the only one it has a slight chance of is screenplay.
Yeah.
And that's slight. You know, I think all the others it doesn't really have much.
Only two it has a chance in right now are original screenplay and film editing. And I think Promising Young Woman is all but a lock. And for editing, originally I did think Trial of Chicago 7 would win, but Sound of Metal has been gaining a lot of steam in editing. I think that might.
One of those three I haven't seen, so I can't speak to it. But, yeah, between the two of them, I thought Chicago was better, but you've seen them, so I trust your judgment.
Yeah, so I think the best comparison to it this year for me would probably be American Hustle, where it wins SAG, Best Cast, and then goes to the Oscars and just goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so moving on to the next category, we have Best Director. And the five nominees are Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round, David Fincher for Mank, Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman. Howard, what do you think?
Well, I've only seen three of them. I suppose my favorite actually might be, it would be one of those years where I would give David Fincher the award for directing and nothing else. I wouldn't even nominate it for Best Picture. But I have a very, I do whatever I can to make a very big distinction between directing and screenplay and picture. Everybody says, if it wins Best Picture, it has to be the best directed. And I'm going, no, you can have the best directed and it'd be a terrible picture overall. But it looks like Nomadland is going to win, and I can't argue with that. It's very beautifully done. It's incredibly well directed, and so is Minari. But I haven't seen Promising Young Woman or Another Round, though I love Thomas Vinterberg.
Okay. Jeanette?
I think there is. I think Nomadland will probably win. I think there's something to be said. And we've mentioned how Nomadland feels. It's beautiful, and it does feel like a documentary. I think there's something to be said to that stylistic choice. I think that Chloe Zhao made some interesting calls, and yeah.
Okay, Richard.
The only one I've seen is Mank and. But it looks like Chloe Zhao is the favorite, and Nomadland probably will be the thing that pushes her over the edge. And I think that that's probably a nice opportunity to give the award to a film that people have a lot of respect for.
Okay, Lisa.
I pretty much agree with what's being said so far. I think Fennell will get her due with screenplay, whereas I think that Nomadland will come out here for directing. Anything I say is just going to be reiterative. So.
Okay, Cameron.
I'm pretty much in agreement with everyone. The only nominee I would keep would be Chloe Zhao. Everyone else, bye.
Mm-hmm.
Although Fennell would just miss the cut for me.
Yeah, I think she and Zhao are your top contenders.
Fennell and Chung would miss my cut, but just miss. Personally, I'd have my list is as of right now is Michelangelo Covino for The Climb, Shaka King for Judas and the Black Messiah, Eliza Hittman for. Or Never Really, Sometimes Always, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and Christopher Nolan for Tenet.
I would have liked to have seen King here.
Me too.
I am a little surprised that Nolan didn't get... I mean, that movie required a ton of direction.
Yeah, and it's not a screenplay award. It's all a lot of other things, but...
That's very true. Okay, and I obviously agree with everybody that I think that Chloe Zhao is pretty much a lock here. I'm trying to think if there's any awards that she hasn't won the best director for.
I'll actually pull that up right now, but apparently as of right now, I know she's won 50 something awards, at least 50 awards.
And she did win the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
The Oscar does have the unfortunate location of being the last in the award season. So it does kind of.
I think it's done on purpose.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, director just came up. You're right.
All right. So now we shall go to the final nominated film, The Father, which is nominated for, let's see who can guess, how many?
Six.
How many nominations?
Six.
I love it.
I think everyone just filled out their ballots and said, okay, let's just nominate everyone for six movies.
You know, cool. It also feels like categories. Here's our limited field of movies that was released this year.
Right.
Yeah, but six of the eight nominees for Best Picture have six nominations, which is pretty amazing.
Has not won was from the London Film Critics Circle.
I saw the Austin Film Festival. She didn't win Best Director. She won Best Screenplay there.
London gave it to Small Axe.
To who?
Small Axe, you know, the anthology film series that Steve Green did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the father.
That's its whole bag of bones, but yeah.
So the father, the six nominations are Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role, Anthony Hopkins, Best Supporting Actress for Olivia Colman, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Film Editing, Best Production Design, and Best Picture. This is actually one of the movies we haven't really discussed very much. Who has seen it and would like to discuss it?
Which one?
Cameron, go ahead. The Father.
Oh.
That's the one that I know you haven't seen, Howard.
Right.
And yeah. Richard hasn't seen it yet either.
No, I have not seen it.
And neither has Lisa.
Nope, sorry.
Okay, so Cameron and I are the only two that
have seen it. I've lived it, okay. So Cameron, I don't need to see it.
Easily the most depressing out of all the nominees, but it's worth it. Yeah, Hopkins and Coleman do incredible, incredible work. Screenplay, very well done. Direction is great. But the two biggest strengths are the editing and the production design. The editing, because of the editing, puts you into that sense of, you know, puts you into that sense of what it's like to be someone with dementia, and same with the production design as well, for reasons that I will not spoil on here, but I think it'll be evident exactly. Once you see.
Correct. I completely agree with you on that. I think that Hopkins is amazing here also. It's in some ways, in my opinion, his best performance, even better than what he did in Silence of the Lambs, because he's able to let us get into his head.
By the way, he did just win the BAFTA.
Interesting. Very interesting. I'm very happy to hear that.
Does this spell anything different for the Oscars?
Well, we'll get to that category in a second. We'll discuss that. So I think that we'll discuss it when we get to the category of best actor. So let's move on to best actor. We have Riz Ahmed for Sound of Music. Sound of Metal.
Sound of Music would be a good choice too.
He was so good in that.
seeing him sing the Hills Are Alive, you know, which is great.
Chadwick
Boseman. Yeah, he probably would. Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Anthony Hopkins for The Father, Gary Oldman for Mank, and Steven Yeun for Minari. Howard, what do you think about this category?
Well, I've seen everything but Anthony Hopkins. It looks like Chadwick Boseman is supposed to win. I just have an issue with the movie. I thought the acting is great. I thought it's technically great, but the movie is so stagey, and I don't mean stagey in that it's only in like limited location. It's the way it's written. For example, Chadwick Boseman has this huge long monologue because someone said one line, and this person said this one line, and then he goes off on this. And halfway through, I'm going, what is he talking about? Why is he delivering this monologue? There's absolutely no motivation for this. So I guess you have to hand it to him for delivering it. So it often seemed like a bunch of people giving big speeches without very strong motivations for it. And so to me, that sort of works against his performance for me personally. I would probably go with Gary Oldman for Mank, but Chadwick Boseman is supposed to win, partially because of his
untimely.
Because he has
passing.
Always work, and yeah, Anthony Hopkins might be able to squeak in, but of course he's British, so that's going to give him an edge.
At the BAFTAs. I think that because Chadwick Boseman passed, this is a guy who, had he not died, probably would have been nominated for several Oscars over the coming years. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like a way to honor that legacy of what we're not going to get, unfortunately. So
true. But the question is if he wouldn't have passed, do you think he would have been nominated this year for that role?
That's a really good question.
Nominated. I think he would have been nominated. I'm not sure he would have won.
Yeah,
I think he might have been nominated,
right?
In
maybe
supporting
again,
actor.
Didn't need to be a movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, Lisa?
I echo what everybody else has said so far. You know, I think his passing was a very sad loss. I do wonder, though, I think you're right, this idea of would he be such a contender if he was still with us? And I've often thought that about Heath Ledger's Joker. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, it's a wonderful character, but I don't know that he would have won had he still been with us. I don't know. I don't really have a horse in this particular race. So I kind of defer to what's going on, and this will be one where I sort of look around and see what people are predicting. I think Bozeman and Hopkins are your contenders, but I think Oldman could come and snipe it from them. So I'm not sure where people will go with this one.
Okay. Richard?
I've actually seen three of these performances, so I feel like I can chime in a little bit. Chadwick Boseman was perfectly fine, but I agree with Howard that it feels like every few minutes we get a speech by somebody in the movie that doesn't really seem like it fits in with the story. And just because he gives the best speech doesn't necessarily mean that it's a fully developed character and the performance is complete. I think that he was great in a couple of other films that he did in his career, Chadwick Boseman, that he got ignored. I can't believe, Get On Up was not a great movie, but the performance was fantastic. And the fact that he...
I loved him in...
Yeah, and that was the other one that I would say, where he was the reason to see the movie. This is their chance to kind of make good on some opportunities that they missed when they had the chance. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to, harp on the thing about the dead, but you know what? This may be Anthony Hopkins' last go-round also. I mean, the Academy is this year, they've got choices that they have to make because of the pandemic, because of the choices that they're faced with. There's controversy about the way things have been decided. I have no idea where they're going to go with this. Bozeman, I think, is the favorite, but only a slight favorite over Anthony Hopkins. I wouldn't be surprised to see anybody in this category win.
Okay. Cameron?
I agree with three of the nominees here. Ahmed, Hopkins, and Yin. Chadwick Boseman was great, but he just misses my personal cut. In my opinion, I think he was better in The Five Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
And Oldman, great, but same deal. Just misses my personal cut.
Okay, and who are the two that you would put in there?
I would have moved Lakeith over to lead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would have nominated Michelangelo Cavino for The Climb. He's like hilarious, but also darkly hilarious as just this toxic, terrible friend. Oh my God, he's great. Personally, I think Bozeman's gonna win, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Hopkins come in, or even Riz Ahmed. Personally, I'd give it to Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal.
Okay. Who else still hasn't said anything about this? Has anyone said it? Just me? Okay. I lost track there for a second. Sorry, guys. I think the best performance here is definitely Hopkins. Most of you haven't seen the movie. I strongly recommend that you do see it if you can within the next 2 weeks to help give you a better opinion as to who you think should win, whether it should be Hopkins or not. But at least you'll have seen the performance to help make the decision. I think Bozeman's role is quite good, but I also think that he b- belongs more in the supporting role category than in the lead role. The film itself doesn't, I think Viola Davis also should be in supporting role. I think the film is structured in a way that all of the characters are in some way supporting. There's no one who really stands out to me in the film where you can say specifically that this is the lead, because it's presented in a very ensemble type of way. So I was sort of hoping that they would try to put Bozeman in the supporting actor role for most of the award nominations. So this way he would have been able to take that one away and give Hopkins a chance to show that even after 30 years, he's still able to give a very powerful performance. Now, back to something that Lisa mentioned before about Heath Ledger. When Heath Ledger won in 2008, when the movie came out, he was up against Josh Brolin for Milk, Michael Shannon for Revolutionary Road, Philip Seymour Hoffman for Doubt, and Robert Downey Jr. for Tropic Thunder. So I do disagree with you I don't think anyone of those four gave a better performance than Heath Ledger did. I'm sure that the fact that he passed away a year before the Oscars definitely had something to do with him getting the extra push. But even looking back in retrospect after 13 years or 12 years, I don't think any of the others would give a would be considered a more powerful performance.
I think that's fair. I would push for Hoffman a little bit, but I think in the long run, you're probably right. So just my two cents.
Right. Okay. No, as we've said numerous times, none of us get to vote, so it doesn't really make a difference.
Right.
You know, I understand the reason why a lot of people think that Chadwick Boseman should get the Oscar, you know, as a posthumous award. But I'm a firm believer that you should be giving the trophy to the most deserving performance, mm-hmm. and not necessarily take into consideration what the actor has gone through or, you know, what has happened to the actor in, you know, subsequently. I mean,
we're making predictions, though. We're not necessarily saying he deserves it because he died. We're just talking about what's likely to happen.
No, I understand.
Right. And the other side of the coin is to suggest that the Academy Awards are always based on who gave the best performance. I think that's a little
lying. Obviously, I don't think that, but I'm saying what I think it should be.
I agree with you.
Okay, so we've now finished going through all the categories, and we've discussed all of the best pictures. So we have 8 best picture nominees: The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Howard, what do you think is the most deserving best picture here on this list, and which do you think will win?
Well, I haven't seen all of them.
But of what you've seen?
I have not seen Promising Young Woman or The Father.
Okay, so the 6 that you've seen.
Okay, so it's probably going to be Nomadland. That almost seems a lock now. I think,
by the way,
that of the 6,
Nomadland did win the BAFTA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which they actually say is not a good sign, because there are a lot of years where the winner of the BAFTA did not win.
Oh, and Frances McDormand won
in the last 10 years.
The BAFTA as well.
Is that?
Yeah.
Really?
Is that?
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. But Nomadland and Minari have the leads. I think that actually a number of the films are fitting into for the last sort of 5 to 10 years. I don't know if it's that long. There's been a slow change in what films are getting nominated and what films are winning at the Oscars. And over the last 5 years, it's especially been because they have started changing how people become members of the Academy so that they can nominate. They've greatly diversified. They're getting a much younger group, adding that the last 4 years have been incredibly depressing, which might answer why, you know, Bill Maher's thing about, oh, they're all so depressing. Well, we've lived a very depressing last 4 years. both Nomadland and Minari, I think, fit both into the new diversity of the Academy, as well as the more recent focus on socially relevant or important or diverse topics. And so I think Nomadland right now is speaking to America in a way.
Okay. I can understand that completely. Okay, Cameron, what do you think?
It's going to be Nomadland. Personally, my pick out of them would be Judas and Black Messiah, but Nomadland's a close second. Although I think I'd keep six of the eight and then add two more to make it 10. I'd keep The Father, Judas and Black Messiah, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal. I'd get rid of Mank and replace that with The Climb, and get rid of Charles Strauss and replace that with Tenet, and then add Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, and Borat 2.
Oh, you would give Borat to be a Best Picture. Interesting.
A nominee, yes. Person.
No, I understand that. No, I understand. I understood that. Yeah. Okay. Jeanette?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be Nomadland, but my choice would have been Tenet if that had been nominated. That was my favorite last year.
Okay. Lisa?
I think that's interesting because I love Christopher Nolan and I thought Tenet was good. I did not think it was that good. I don't know.
Of
I find
last year.
No, and that's fair. I think it's interesting because I'm not questioning you. I'm just expressing my idea here. I think they could be an interesting possibility for production design, Tenet.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely visual effects, but I don't know. For best picture, I think Nomadland is your lead horse, but I think Promising Young Woman could come and snipe it out from under them. I don't think it will happen though, but stranger things have occurred, especially in the last year. So I think of the other possibilities, I think those are just your only two that really would people would look back on and say, yeah, I'm okay with that one. Whereas if any of these others win, maybe Judas and the Black Messiah, but I think what we've all sort of discussed is that one does get slow somewhere in the middle. And Mank put Richard to sleep. And, you know, I don't think they're quite as engaging as Nomadland and Promising Young Woman. I think those are your two standouts here. And so I think it would go to Nomadland in the long run. And Promising Young Woman won Best British Film at the BAFTAs. So it's kind of dancing between the two of them, it seems.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah, my guess would be that Nomadland is going to win. I think Chloe Zhao's likely to win. These things often go together, not always, but pretty consistently. And I think that this has been the film that's gotten a lot of attention. I haven't seen it. I just know that, on the list of pictures here, there is nothing that jumps out at me as something that in 10 or 15 years, I'm going to say that was one of the best movies I ever saw. Don't mean disrespect to them. They sound like they're great films, but, I'm not sure that this is one of those years that's going to be, it's like the vintage of wines. The wine might be perfectly passable, but it's not going to be one of those treasured vintages down the road, and I think we've got a year like that.
Right. I definitely agree with that. I think that the movies that we have for the nominated that are nominated in just about all the categories. I mean, 2020 was
sucks.
Wasn't the best year in movies.
It was a year.
I guess you could say that. It was a year. Exactly. So I think that Nomadland is the one that's going to win. As I mentioned before about the BAFTA. That the whatever movie won the BAFTA did not win the Oscar. So in 2013, 12 Years a Slave won the BAFTA. In 2013, they both 12 Years a Slave won both. In 2014, Boyhood won the BAFTA, and Birdman won the Oscar. in 2015, the Spotlight won the Oscar, and the BAFTA went to the Revenant. In 2016, we had La La Land winning the BAFTA, and the Oscar went to Moonlight. In 2017, it was a split between The Shape of Water and Three Billboards. In 2018, we had Green Book and
Roma.
Roma. Thank you. Roma won the BAFTA that year. And then in 2019, you had Parasite in 1917. So it's quite interesting that the last time that the same film won both was in 2013.
Exactly. Interesting. That sounds like they're showing better taste, actually, overall.
Right?
Yes, I actually agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to wait 2 weeks to find out. Is there anything else in general that someone wants to mention about the Oscars this year?
I wish the darn things wouldn't be the night before I have to go to school.
I appreciated how the SAG Awards was like, boom, our show. If only the Oscars could find a way to pull that off.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, so we'll take a break and listen to another. We'll listen to Richard.
We're going to take a break and we're going to hear from a fellow Lamb Podcasting Network show.
Hey Jay, can I ask you a question?
Sure, Mark. Far away.
How come Carter's always sliding around in Deep Blue Sea?
Wow.
And how come Preacher has a bird in the kitchen?
I think...
Should Janice have won an Oscar for all that exposition?
Yeah, I mean...
Who do the sharks hate the most? How far did Jim travel underwater?
About...
Why do they keep calling Brenda Tower?
Mark, please, we've already covered all of these topics and many, many more on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
You mean the podcast where we analyze Rennie Harlan's 1999 masterpiece, Deep Blue Sea, chapter by chapter?
Exactly! Find it everywhere podcasts can be found.
And we're back for a very short time because we've decided that 2 hours is enough. And you know what? Rants, raves, and reviews seem to be minimal in comparison to all of the discussion that we've just had. And you know what? We had a late start today, so the energy for playing a game is low as well. We would like to have people, though, plug those things that they have to share with us. So, Lisa, could you start? Tell us what it is you have to plug this week.
So I'm just plugging my appearance on the Critical Movie Critics website. Again, though, it is not my website. I am just one of the many critics. So definitely go check out thecriticalcritics.com to see what we're watching.
Cameron, you don't really have anything to plug, do you? Okay. Because
no.
I know your site's not active. Jeanette, what are you plugging this week?
You can check out my reviews over at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. I'll have a review of Thunder Force up this week, which I loved. Huge surprise there. Sarcasm. The other thing is that my dance troupe is working on finding a safe way to transition back to, you know, air quotes, new normal. So we did start a new session of classes. So we are offering hybrid classes. If you've ever thought about taking belly dance and weren't sure how or where or why, this might be your opportunity. So reach out to me on Facebook if you have any interest, and we can get you signed up for some Zoom classes.
So cool.
Rob, what have you got to promote this week?
Okay,
and you first, remember, keep the list low.
keep this what?
Not more than 10 items, please.
Well, first I wanted to plug things on the Lamb, all right? Because this month, Acting School 101, we're looking at reviews of movies by Russell Crowe. The director's chair this month just ended earlier this week, which was David Fincher. I don't know yet who the new director's chair will be. Obviously, with this show, we've started once again this year's Lamb Devours the Oscars. If you go into the Lamb site, you'll see that we've already put up a few reviews by the time this comes out. And you know, if you see that there's anything on the roster that's still untaken, feel free to shoot me an email or send me a tweet, and you know, we're looking for more people to add their thoughts on various Oscar categories or their opinions on some of the best picture reviews. the Best Picture nominees on my website, which is movierob.wordpress.com. This week I'm closing in on my 7,600th review. So I've got something fun that'll be coming out on Thursday this week for that. And this month's genre grandeur was chosen by Rebecca of Almost Ginger, and we'll be reviewing our favorite travel films. So if you have anything there, you can send me an email. You can reach me by email with whatever you want to put it as the preface at movierob.net. Anything comes to me.
Wow.
All right. And on the LAMB site, I believe that you can still vote for the Tom Hanks draft. That has not closed yet. And we do have a franchise movie of the month coming up next week. So we don't have a new poll up for the next month's movie of the month yet. So that'll be coming up on my own site. I have a review up of Voyagers, a completely average film that you don't need to worry about seeing.
Darn, really?
It's okay. I wish it was better, but it's not. But the popcorn and the hot tamales were great. So,
yay!
All right, let me thank all of our guests for taking some time here to talk about the Oscars a couple of weeks ahead of time and to follow along as we were updating with the BAFTA Awards. Everybody pay close attention in the next couple of weeks. Maybe you'll be able to enter your Oscar pool after listening to our show. Thank you all very much. And remember, the 2021 Oscars are brought to you by Razor Blades, Kleenex, and Rope. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 579 of the LAMBcast. This week, we tackle the movies that Oscar Academy says were the best this year. You know, 2020, not exactly the best of anything. In a year of pandemic, when theaters closed and the Oscars caved in to the necessity of nominating films that were streamed rather than exhibited, these are the films that were deemed most worthy of attention. Something that the public has largely disagreed with, as we will discuss and predict. Bill Maher said that best, you know, judging by this year's Best Picture nominees, you couldn't have a worse time at the movies if there was an active shooter in the theaters. There's a lot of depressing stuff that's out there, and that's what got nominated. This is certainly the year that I'm least qualified to lead the discussion of the Academy Awards, since I've only seen a microcosm of the nominees, but don't let that fret you at all. We have a list of our own that will solve some of that. The lambs who are going to get us through this. And they include Movie Rob, who, if he hasn't seen it by today, will surely have a post in your mailbox on it tomorrow. He lives in a world where the rules about theaters being open change week by week, but he never lets that stop him from seeing something that he thinks is worthy. The Michigan movie guy, Cameron Kanacki. She's a little wary about venturing into theaters, but has no fear about spouting off on movies she hasn't seen. Our favorite fangirl, Jeanette Ward.
You know that's right.
If it opened in 2020, he may not have seen it. But if it opened in 1940, he's your man. Living in the home of movies, Howard Kasner.
That's wonderful.
I've always denied the rumor that I was in the audience the night Lincoln was shot.
What do you mean you were on stage?
And she may not know what it is ahead of time, but if it opens and she needs it, believe me, she'll get it. Lisa Leahy.
That's a great way of putting it.
We're going to talk about the Oscars, the eight big categories, the rule changes, the show format, and anything else that we want to cover. Leading the discussion will be our resident Oscar expert, the man in charge of the Lamb Devours the Oscars, Movie Rob. Take it away, Rob.
Go to hell. Go to hell.
You've been listening to the LAMBcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the LAMBcast,
Contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.